What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with two chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 supports your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.
Even though it was transactional, did it give me sort of a framework within which to state a need and try to practice that? Because in my relationship, I still had a fear of vulnerability and a fear of intimacy.
Welcome to the Secret Life Podcast. Tell me your secret. I'll tell you mine. When I first started my recovery 11 years ago, I struggled through the textbook-like material on the subject. I wanted to make the addiction and the recovery from it accessible and relatable to more people by telling it in an entertaining way. Well, I'm super excited to announce I've released my first book, Secret Life of a Hollywood Sex and Love Addict. If I can help just one person find a solution or at least realize they're not broken or alone, then writing this has been worth it. You can pick up the book exclusively at Amazon or signed copy at secretlifenovel.com. And the best way to support our podcast is to subscribe and share. If you haven't left a review or rating on Apple Podcasts yet, please do. It'll help more people find our show. And if you want to be a guest, shoot me a note at secretlifepodcast@iCloud.com. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to Secret Life Podcast. I'm Breanne Davis-Gant. Today I'm pulling back the curtains of all kinds of human secrets. We'll hear about what people are hiding from themselves or others. You know, those deep, dark secrets we probably want to go to our grave with, or those lighter, funnier secrets that are just plain embarrassing. Really, the how, what, when, where, and why of it all. Today, my guest is Matt. Matt, I have a question for you.
I'm listening.
Dun, dun, dun. What is your secret?
Great question. I had no idea that would be the where we'd be starting today. No. I guess my secret is, this is going to sound really broad. I guess I'm a sex and love addict.
Welcome to the club.
And that is not something, that is something sort of recently discovered.
Yeah.
And that I am still working through after the last 9 or 10 months.
Wow.
So that is not something that, most people would know.
Can and you tell me about the first moment you actually had to say it, or it was like so in your face, you couldn't deny that you had this addiction?
It probably was when I blew up my long-term relationship last year. Mm-hmm. So that would have been, maybe 9 months ago. And I was caught by my fiance, basically coming out of a massage parlor.
Mm.
So there was that. And in the ensuing conversation later on, it was, was extremely heated, of course, but stating like how often I had been going in the last few years and knowing that I wasn't really able to stop myself and not really sure what was going on.
Yeah.
I guess I was like, well, I can't think of any other reason. I'm going to have to go with that.
Did you ever say to yourself, like, I'm not going to go anymore. This is the last time. Like, I'm not going to do this, and then not be able to stop?
Yeah. There were definitely times where I'm like, that was fine. That should satiate me. I should be good, And then, some weeks go by and, the mood strikes again,
Yeah. Or the feelings come up and you just want to get out of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I was able to compartmentalize, of course, and not, keep my long-term relationship, my romantic relationship separate from, my acting out.
Yeah.
And never think that one would affect the other. There wasn't any sort of emotional thing, it wasn't an emotional affair. It wasn't like it was with a friend or anything like that. I mean, it was, these physical encounters.
Yeah.
And, I kept thinking, that it was just sort of like exercise on the side. And so it's definitely a hard truth to realize.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of what I'm discovering. So I went into an inpatient program.
Mm-hmm. How was that? I actually never been into an inpatient program, so I would love to hear about it.
It was intense.
I love the breath you gave. You're like,
it's exhausting.
Well, the whole thing is exhausting. Let's be serious.
It's very true.
When you look at any addiction and you have to like surrender, it is the worst feeling in the world.
Yeah. And it was really a period of readjustment for me as well. And I also went to a sober living house. Mm-hmm. And it was basically me and two other guys. It was supposed to be a fourth, but it was me and two other guys. But we lived in a sober living house that was mostly for drug and alcohol, a drug and alcohol rehab house. And I like to joke, most of the guys in the house were like college age. So it just felt like a dry fraternity house.
Yeah.
I mean, with guys who were 25 years younger than me, who were just as boisterous and pulling pranks. And it's like, everyone has to share the damn kitchen. And it's like four floors of dudes in this house. And
you're like, don't eat my loaf of bread.
It really was that kind of thing. It was like,
my name is on it. I am struggling right now. I can barely keep it together. Do not eat my sandwich.
I ordered that gnocchi from Trader Joe's. It's my favorite. And then it was like, that was, 2 weeks. It was a 2 week program. It was sort of sober living house, strict as far as like, when you wake up, you can't drive yourself. You relinquish your phone for part of, each day and at mm-hmm. night. And then of course, during the day we're doing group therapy. And it's me and three other guys and it's, 8 hours a day group therapy. In the middle, we go to a meeting, group meeting mm-hmm. and we have homework every night and we have individual therapy session each day too.
Yeah, that's intense. I mean,
it really, yeah. And you're peeling back a lot of layers.
Very quickly. And then the scary thing though, and I have to say this, is I've talked to a lot of people that's done the inpatient, but then you have to come out into your life and then kind of readjust completely because you have to now you're in this safe place for 2 weeks and then you come in your life and you're like, wait, what am I doing now?
it was interesting to come out and have assignment in a way, because I came out and mm-hmm. they immediately assign you to do a 90 meeting in 90 day for, and I'm like, that's standard. And again, I thought, okay, I can do this 90 meetings in 90 days. That's fine. I can do this. And then still meet with a therapist there at this particular company. Mm-hmm. So I had a previous therapist, my own, for like 6-7 years. And I kind of saw her one more time and then said, I can't do both. So I'm going to just do the one, the actual CSAT therapist. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And then it was just sort of like treating it like going to school for 3 months. It was like, and being intense about my studies and doing the 90 meetings in 90 days, got a sponsor, worked in the steps and, and doing a lot of self-discovery. And during that time also, my relationship had blown up. So it was finding I had to move out and it was like getting a sublet and then, trying to, and still communicating with my ex and still figuring out whether or not we would even be able to move forward. And, can we do all of that? So you're right. It was a lot of readjustment in that regard. And a lot of figuring out for me and learning about, here, and I've been through a lot of realizations. So you're kind of catching me after all this stuff.
No, I want to hear the revelations. And if you looked back in your life and saw why you did the things you did, why you used those behaviors.
So
tell us.
I learned about trauma repetition in therapy. When I was a kid, I had sexual abuse from a family member and then also a boy outside the family who was older than me.
Right.
So I learned, and I have always been, this is the thing that I would hide from people, is I've been a sexual person. I mean, a very sexually expressive person in my own way, but hiding it from people. I was very, I didn't mind experimenting with one or with men or women.
Right.
But I learned in those situations with men, first of all, that it was more of a trauma repetition role that I kept playing,
right?
Just basically repeating the same thing of me being not in control and being molested
and taken advantage of
and thinking I could control it and differentiate the outcome, but not really ever being able to relax in those situations. But I would continue to have those. I mean, I you know, sought out that situation a number of times.
Yeah, it was almost to re-traumatize yourself because you internally or subconsciously you were taken advantage of. So it's
weird. What's fascinating is having a template set for yourself by someone else.
Yeah.
You didn't order this template. You didn't ask for this template. Because it kind of went along with the abuse from the family member.
How long did that go on?
That went on for probably 2 or 3 years from a female.
Wow. Yeah.
But it was, again, a passive thing. It was sort of like I would be prompted when I would need to show up in that way. I had no control over that. I couldn't decide. Oh,
right.
Now this is the time. And I was probably 12, 13, 14, 15. And then she was several years older than I was.
Here's my question for you. And you don't have to answer it if you feel uncomfortable, but do you think being 12 or 13, you also, even though you were getting taken advantage of, that there was a part of you that was attracted by it?
Completely.
Or turned on by it?
Completely. I remember even an incident of at one point, you know, because I would wonder if those moments were going to happen.
Right.
And it was never about me either. It was always me having to, it was for her pleasure, not for mine. But I still was attracted to it, still wanted it, still was kind of turned on by it. And I remember even one time, like, trying to go to her room at like 3 a.m. and thinking that something would happen, but it's 3 a.m, you know, people are sleeping. But it was like, I don't know what was motivating me to do that. But you're right. There was definitely some confusion. But what I realized, you know, through therapy and is the template that it set as for me being passive in a certain way and not comfortable with stating any of my own needs. And
that makes sense. That completely makes sense when you say it like that, that then you would do that in the future because you had no control over yourself then.
And I felt that I only had worth if I was desired. If someone wanted me in that way, I needed to be available to them. So I wasn't very choosy about partners. It was like, oh, this person wants me. Okay, they can have me. I wasn't that choosy. So a lot of the peeling back of the layers is with me acting out as far as outside of my, when I acted out outside of my long-term relationship, it was the first time I'd actually really done it. And it went on for a number of years. And it's been a lot of like figuring out, was that me trying to, even though it was transactional, did it give me sort of a framework within which to state a need and try to practice that?
Maybe.
That's one of the things that I was thinking of, because in my relationship, I still had a fear of vulnerability and a fear of intimacy.
And for asking what you need.
And asking what I need. And I didn't ever feel comfortable. And I had been married previously too.
Yeah.
Before this last relationship, and same thing there. There was no infidelity in my marriage, but it was definitely the same sort of thing. Like I'm waiting, you know, it's like, I'm just sort of like waiting to be activated.
Right.
You know, your partner needs you sexually. You have to show up. Oh, okay.
Even if you don't want to.
Even if I don't want to, I'm going to take this opportunity. And the fact that I would want sex anyway, but I just didn't even know how to ask. I didn't even know how to sort of bring it up. It was very difficult for me in that regard to state a need, because that puts the other person, gives the other person power. They have leverage to deny me or reject me. And, you know,
That makes complete sense. So doing that work with your therapist and looking at these transactions you were doing to disconnect from your reality also, it was like a way to like be a separate person than in your marriage or your relationship. Do you feel that?
Yeah, I do. And that's maybe the part of the compartmentalization that happened. I think it sort of gave me a set, like I said, a framework or sort of boundary within which it was safe. I had actually started, as far as the transactional, that particular slice of the pie, I had started seeing sex workers after I got divorced. And this was probably like 13 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was maybe once a month. I mean, not even that, you know, so I would go through periods where there would be none. And then I seemed like, you know, and then there'll be a few more. I guess in a way, it was a way for me to set boundaries that if I did state a need, I didn't feel like, oh, a relationship, quote unquote, is ruined because I've upset them or offended them. There's already set boundaries that this is a transactional thing. You can still have fun and everyone sort of knows what the rules are. And you're not going to get a text later that says, I can't believe you asked for that, or I can't believe you said that, you know.
Yeah, it's a way of safety too, to protect yourself.
In a way. Now, here's the thing. It's like, I didn't obviously do it well enough because I hadn't practiced, you know, I hadn't gotten over my fear of vulnerability or fear of intimacy in time for my next long-term relationship. Cause I still somehow wound up going back down that route. And what I'm realizing is it's sex is not the problem. Sex is never the problem. Sex is neutral. Sex is a symptom of something else.
Sex is just a small little sliver. It's usually not even about the sex. It's about what, why you're using the sex and how you're using the sex. If it's a power, if it's a control, if it's a disconnect, or it's transactional and there's boundaries and you can't get hurt by this person, or, you know, you can't hurt them or they can't hurt you. It's just a small thing.
And that's what I've been trying to figure out since this. And, you know, trying to make those, you know, real deep self-realizations, you know, about myself, you know, whether it's through therapy or working in with my sponsor or program or, you know, other fellows and doing readings and things like that. Journaling. Everyone always wants you to journal.
Journal. They loved. Write your feelings down. My favorite was my first sponsor was like, just like scribble and write like, you can even be like, God, I hate you, like blah, blah, blah. And it actually really works, but I hated doing it. I would have to be in like the biggest amount of pain to actually sit down and journal. I hated it.
In some ways it gives me a chance to write more than I used to write creatively. And it's like, I really got out of that. So like, unless... So it's in some ways I'm like, it's good practice, you know?
No, it's great. It's don't listen to me, but I'm just saying like, I just hated it because at that time, my first year of withdrawal in the program was 9 months. It was brutal. Like I cried every day for 9 months. And I remember like having to journal and just writing the same thing over and over again. It was that all that trauma was just stuck in my body and I could not like get it out.
Yeah.
So I've been there but I do want to go to like the first time you walked into the actual, you know, room and how that felt. I'm always curious when I hear about people's first time walking into the room. If you remember.
I first went to there because, you know, there's different versions of the same group.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, the first one I went to was not in, I don't know, you know, about, you know, in terms of, am I able to give the acronyms for these groups like SA or?
Yeah, you can totally.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, the literal first group I went to in this arena was SA, which is extremely strict and has more of a religious bent. And I felt uncomfortable.
I've been to a lot of SA meetings. I like when I travel, there's more SA meetings than SLAA. So I know what exactly what you mean.
Yeah. And I immediately was like, this isn't
for me. Yeah.
Because it was too much like you, the only way forward is a life of abstinence or a life of celibacy. And I'm like, I'm not trying to be a monk. I want to have a healthy sexuality and I like to be, you know, it's like, I'm not looking for that. So my first SLA meeting, my first law meeting was a morning meeting and on the weekend. And it felt much more what I needed because the speaker was even just sharing about like more about like, going after unavailable men, you know, what was she denying herself? What was she hiding from herself? And that, I loved that emotional aspect to it. And that relational aspect to it. A lot of the conversations with my ex, you know, which were extremely painful, and I will forever be remorseful about pain and the pain that I caused her and, you know, the betrayal. But, I think in her mind, the only way forward for me would also have been abstinence or celibacy. And it's really hard for me to sign on for that.
Yeah.
You know, like even a no masturbation clause. I'm like, I can't guarantee that. I just can't. I don't know how I can. That to me is just a healthy part of being a sexual person. I can't.
I agree. But I do think you have to take it out of your life, work on what's underneath it, and then you bring it back in a healthy way.
Yeah. So there was definitely a period of, you know, after coming out of the inpatient, there was definitely months of complete abstinence and celibacy and working on this stuff. And that I see it, you know, as a system reboot. You know?
It's a rebuild. And, you're breaking yourself down to then repair yourself.
Yep. And my thing was, you know, I would hear stories from guys in SA And that's why I went to like one or two other SA meetings, and it just was like, oh my gosh, that some of the stories that I would hear from someone who would spend 6-7 hours watching porn. I'm like, I've never been that.
Right.
I could go weeks and days. I could go days and weeks without seeing it at all. It just, I mean, it's, but I definitely don't argue with a detox. That's fine. You know, but I never felt like I was at that level where I was ignoring work or not sleeping or not eating. I'm like, no, you know, we have that whole halt.
Hungry, angry, lonely, and tired.
And I would tell my therapist, and this was even during the inpatient, they were sometimes bemused by me because they would be like, well, you know, what are you doing when you sexualize anger? I'm like, no, when I'm angry, I don't feel sexual. When I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm lonely, I will call my mom. But when I'm tired, I will go to sleep. When I'm happy, then I can be sexual. And it's like, they would be like, huh, okay. So there weren't things that I was able to easily avoid. And it's like, I didn't feel as completely off balance.
Well, you were functioning too. So
yes,
you were functioning. You weren't like down on the street, like getting a prostitute. You were still functioning in your everyday life. So that's when it can get a little gray. And people that are listening, you know, you think, oh, I'm not as bad as that person, or I don't do it as horrible as that. But if it's still a problem in your life and it's hurting somebody you care about, that's something to look at.
I know. And I don't mean to dismiss it at all.
You're not at all. You're not dismissing it. You're telling your truth, which I totally love. But I just want the listeners to know you can have these behaviors that don't affect your life completely, but still are keeping you disconnected from your life. It doesn't
Absolutely.
Have to be extremes.
I mean, I still ended a long-term relationship and blew it up. And it was a good relationship, you know, and every relationship has its pluses and minuses, but I still feel sad. I mean, I'm going to feel sad for a long time about it anyway, but like I couldn't. And so like, obviously I could be like, oh, I wasn't as bad as whatever I did or didn't do still ended a good long-term relationship.
But sometimes the worst things like that have to happen for there to be healing. And I'm sure your ex down the line will understand. And it's like the people I have hurt now on the other side, 10 years, 11 years later, I'm so grateful for them hurting me and me for hurting them, because I got to heal and grow and now give back to other people.
That's amazing you say that. I didn't think about it, like being thankful for.
And if a person is listening and they've been cheated on, or they're the cheaters, it's like, it doesn't have to do with the other person. She could have been the most perfect partner, and this is your own stuff, you know? So there's nothing wrong with her. There's nothing wrong with you.
No.
It's like our own stuff sometimes sabotages our life.
Yeah. And I'm mad at myself that I had these blind spots in myself.
That's okay. You're human. You know, just like I've done some horrible things. I mean, I've written about the horrible things. I've been a terrible person, but that doesn't define who I am. Those are just behaviors I did to survive. The trauma, the things done to me out of my control.
I'm trying to get there.
You will get there.
It's tough. This was the thing that comes up a lot. And even with my previous therapist who, you know, like I said, I saw her for years. I saw her, you know, and she used to, because I try so hard to be perfect.
Oh, that's the worst. Perfectionism. That's the worst character defect. I have it too.
She would call me a robot. She would basically, like, I'm trying to be a robot. I'm like, I allow other people to be imperfect. I would never criticize anyone for a mistake. I allow everyone to make a mistake. I don't show up with any sort of expectations of being disappointed or anything like that. But oh my gosh, I cannot disappoint anybody.
You cannot.
I can't.
You're invincible. You're supposed to be a superhero. You can't disappoint.
Yeah.
It's and so silly what our addict brain tells us. Like we have to
weird.
And what is defined as perfect? There's no definition. Everybody's perfect is so different. So there's no definition for perfectionism, if you think about it.
Yeah, no, you're so, and I think in my head I had something where it's like, well, someone can't find fault with me or a reason to not like me.
Mm.
Like I got to the point of hiding so much about myself, and even not, it would become like a joke that I couldn't even say, oh, I like this. This is my favorite, or have an opinion. Someone would be like, you like what? Oh God, now my opinion of you has changed. Like, really? You like that movie? Yeah. It's like, I couldn't even say, because it's like, I couldn't, it's almost like I wanted to be a blank tableau.
Blank canvas.
A canvas, and like people can write onto me what they want. I would even have, I'd see a lot of people in town. I mean, in terms of my business, mm-hmm. I interact with hundreds of people in a sort of a client, you know, partner relationship. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't even tell, like mention if someone was being familiar with me, like, oh, do you have any plans for the weekend? Or if someone mentioned, if anything came up about being in a relationship or something, I just wouldn't share because I didn't want anyone to know anything about me.
You wanted to be like an enigma.
In a way. And, you know, and as far as like in a relationship, I wanted to show up in a way that someone couldn't find fault, whether it was I'm being supportive, I'm doing stuff around the house, I'm, you know, taking care of my part of the bills. I'm, you know, I never wanted anyone to be like, oh, you know what? You really could do better at doing the dishes. Nope, I'm going to be awesome at doing the dishes. You're never going to have to complain about the dishes not being done.
Wow, the stress of that had to be unbelievable.
Realizing that, yes, this is the thing of me going backwards. I'm like, the last few years of the relationship, as much as there were so many great times, I was becoming like mentally and emotionally exhausted internally. Yeah. I was shutting down inside.
Maybe you going to those massage parlors was your only place you could actually breathe and just be.
Yeah, it's likely. It's not ideal, I realize.
No, it's not ideal. I'm not telling people like go do that, but it's like that's where you have to have forgiveness for yourself because that was the only time you could just like be. Because wearing that mask had to be exhausting.
And I could have, what makes me angry about myself is that I could have actually just tried to have a conversation. But again, my fear of vulnerability and my fear of like, I didn't know how to say these words and I didn't want to blow up the relationship. I didn't know what the result would be. I just, it was better for me. I couldn't say anything.
Yeah.
So I just compartmentalized.
So these secrets and this shame that you're still feeling, I can feel it in your voice. I like to attach the seven deadly sins, not in the religious sense, more in the character defect sense. So let me name them for you if any of them ring true to holding this. So we got pride, greed, lust, gluttony, envy, anger, and sloth.
I mean, the first one that jumps out is lust.
Obviously, yes.
I can go for that for sure.
Okay. What about the other ones?
Interestingly, possibly, and I'm thinking of this because someone else might have, they made the same assessment of my behavior was greed.
Ooh, why?
Well, because it was like I got greedy about wanting more in my life than what I already had. It's like it wasn't enough to have a good relationship. I was greedy for more outside of it.
Yeah. What about pride?
That's an interesting one.
With the perfectionism and your ego of like wanting to always be perfect.
Yeah. That's a good one. That's a great observation. There is probably a pride in that because I think I would still think that I was could be compared favorably to other boyfriends or fiancés or whatever, that I'm still, everyone would be like, oh, he's the best, you know? And I guess you're right. There would be a pride in some ways though. It's like, I've made this, you know, equivalency in therapy, like getting a report card. It literally was like, I treated this like either A, schoolwork, or B, a job. Yeah. And I wanted to get high marks and get A's on my report card as a boyfriend or, you know, get a gold star as I showed up, you know, in terms of like, this was my job and we have no complaints about you. You know, congratulations, you get a promotion or whatever.
Everything you're saying right now is there's no surprise that it all crashed and burned because the pressure to live like that has to, you're going to burn out. You're going to do something probably to blow it up because you can't perform at that level of like disconnection and it being like a report card.
I'm learning that now. Yeah. Yeah.
And as he laughs uncomfortably.
Oh, this is just my way.
Yeah, no, I know. People, I love it.
Oh, in inpatient program, they were constantly annoyed that I would do this. They would be like, they wouldn't yell at me, be like, stop laughing. It's like, I can't help it. I just, some of this stuff is so insanely ridiculous. And like, they're so obvious now. Why didn't I make these realizations?
Because you didn't have the tools.
I didn't have the tools. I didn't have the objectivity.
No.
I didn't have someone leading me through it.
Yeah. So what's the, now looking at everything you've gone through these last 9 months, what was the benefit of keeping this secret, this, the way you performed in your life, and what was the harm?
Benefits were that I guess it allowed me to fulfill a need on my own terms.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying right or wrong, but I guess I was able to get needs met on my own terms, even though it was outside the relationship.
Right.
Downsides are that I didn't show up 100% as warts and all.
Right.
So people didn't know me, and not valuing the fact that showing up warts and all doesn't mean, it means you're relatable.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I've learned in program and learned in therapy is like, nobody wants a perfect person standing in front of them.
No, I think the flaws are what makes us beautiful. And I think, and I've said this a number of times, I think this, when you see someone that's like hit rock bottom and then they come all the way to the other side, they are the most beautiful people to me.
And that's what I'm learning. I can even say something about myself that will cause a person to not like, and maybe not like isn't the right term, but they'll be like, nah, I really don't want to hang out with you, and be okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
And value the fact that it's okay if not everybody approves of me.
And that's what I learned. I also like, not everybody's going to like you, and that is okay. As long as your side of the street is clean and you didn't harm anybody, it's okay if someone doesn't like you.
Yeah. And as I've made the same realization, like you can show up in what you think is the best, kind, most perfect way, and someone could still not like you.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about it.
Nothing you can do about it. Yes. Yeah. And 99% of the time it has nothing to do with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's okay.
Just, yeah. Well, I was talking to my therapist a lot about it, and it's like, I should just be bold and like actually experiment with being not liked.
Ooh, that's a great exercise. I mean, don't like, go be an asshole to anybody, but like,
all.
Just like but walk yeah. in, like you're like, I don't care if you like me right. or not.
Right. I can say that I like this unpopular movie, or I can say that I did this activity, or that it's like, and people were like, ooh.
Okay, well, name your popular movie you like right now. Just name one. Come on, own it.
I have so many. Just
name
don't know
a
if
couple.
I can.
Come on, do it, do it.
I'm a giant nerd, so it's gonna fall into the Star Trek, Star Wars vein. And I like the odd number Star Trek films, and a lot of people don't, but I love the odd number Star Trek films.
Listen to me. I hate those movies. I fell asleep the last one that came out at the theater. My husband made me go watch it, and he will tell you I fell asleep. And through the whole movie, when I was awake, I was like, ugh. So there you go. I hate your movie, and that is okay.
Thank you.
My last
You've made
question.
My day.
Good. My last question for you before you go is, how are you going to move forward in the future?
I'm going to move forward, honestly. I'm going to move forward in a more vulnerable fashion.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I don't need to be unaffected, and I don't by life, and I don't need to be impenetrable. And I want to be able to be more accepting of all sides of myself.
Oh, I love that. You want to be more accepting of your shadow and your light.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's what makes a whole person.
Yeah. I was just talking to a fellow in program last night about it, you know, and actually stating things to her that I don't think I really mentioned to, you know, other people. So, and she did the same. And, you know,
I love that.
And just like not worry. Yeah. It is accepting all sides of myself.
Well, thank you for coming on and sharing this and sharing your secret and being so open and vulnerable with us.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity. This was really wonderful.
And if you want to be on the show, please email me at secretlifepodcast@icloud.com. Until next time. Thanks again for listening to the show. Please subscribe, rate, share, or send me a note at secretlifepodcast.com. And if you like to check out my book, head over to secretlifenovel.com or Amazon to pick up a copy for yourself or someone you love. Thanks again. See you soon.